We've got Campbell from the band Vacations with us today. G'day, Campbell.
Hello.
Hey.
Really welcome good to the Tuck Shop.
Yeah. You are our first interview, by the way, so we're really excited to do this. We've been wanting wanting to do interviews. We're just sort of warming into the show, getting used to what we're playing, and it's really exciting to have the first interview off the rank, so I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor.
Congrats on the second album. That's always exciting to release an album. And second album's always one of those tricky ones because you got to like step up from the first one. But this is like your fourth release. Of course, you've had a couple of other EPs as well. And how does this one feel? How does this album feel different to what you've already released before?
Well, in the past, every other release has been either more of a, like a private solo affair, but also on a more DIY basis. So the first two EPs and the album was more so myself, and it was in my room, you know, at home with a couple of mics and whatever other equipment I had available to me. Contrast that to this new album. It's like we've got record label support, we've got a producer, there's, you know, bandmates that are like contributing and writing, and it's a more collaborative process, which I think has been very fulfilling artistically, but also just like personally, being able to experience both those two almost extremes of the creative process, going from something that's kind of like more private and personal at home, and then going from that really classic like rock and roll recording experience, which is something I've always wanted to do since I was like, you know, 15, 16. I started going to gigs at like the Enmore in Sydney and watching these big bands, and like, oh, I want to go to the big recording studio and do that too.
Yeah, so totally.
So it's just been a transitional process because, I mean, being when I was like more like younger and impressionable, it's like, yeah, of course you want to do the big recording studio experience, but to do that, you do need that budget and you need those like contacts. And I didn't have that at the time. So it's just sort of like, well, this is what's available to me. I'm going to use what tools I have to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
And then that built up to where we are today, being able to record Forever in Bloom, that second album, in a really nice space with a producer, with like all these other people on board. So yeah, it's been a really fulfilling experience.
Well, and having someone like Oscar Dawson, best known of course for Holy Holy, but also known for his production work with Alex Leahy, Alec Bader, having him on board must have been a huge blast. What did he bring to the recording process, you know, that really helped?
He slotted in with us right away. It felt like we had a fifth member in the band, and just sort of a watchful eye, someone who is extremely experienced and creative, and would just offer us a second opinion, because I feel like it's very easy to go down a rabbit hole with your own material and almost be like protective of it. You know, you don't really want to change that second chorus, so you don't really want to add this new section. But having someone like Oscar, who's more removed from the band experience, you kind of trust those opinions and kind of value their experience and what they have to say. So it was really, it was really insightful. I think it really helped.
Can be sometimes hard to step away from a project that you're so close to, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when songs are coming from different people and you've got, again, a much more collaborative experience where, you know, it's not just like one or two other people. It's like all these other people like contributing to the song process. It's really insightful and just like good experience to have those two contrasting experiences. So to go from, you know, making all this music and all this material with no producer to having a producer and having your bandmates and maybe like record label or your manager also contribute to the songs, like with their own thoughts and opinions, is just good.
Well, I read that you only got a manager sort of recently as well, so having them chip in.
Yeah, God, I was managing the band. I was doing
that's a lot of work.
I was doing too much for like 4 or 5 years straight. I was booking the shows, sorting out photo shoots, booking tours, writing all the material.
On the grind, recording. Literally
24/7. Yeah, recording material. Just doing like every aspect of it. And it was just like, yeah, too much. And then Lee luckily came to us at the right time, and it was just a natural progression of the band. So
yeah
it worked out really well. I'm glad I don't have to do a lot of that managerial work, all that paper stuff. Like it's just fantastic.
More time to focus on the music.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I loved reading that sharing a festival with Slowdive was like a pinch me moment for you guys, and it actually inspired the song Actors. Were you guys able to track them down backstage at the festival in Bangkok?
Oh, sorry, what was that question?
Were you able to track them down backstage when you guys were at the festival?
Oh, no. I wouldn't have wanted to. I don't know. I saw them, like I said in that story, I saw them in the distance playing, and we had to play after them. I mean, granted, it was on the smaller side stage, but it felt bizarre. I didn't feel quite right, especially because that band was so influential to me as I was growing up and really had a huge impact on my guitar playing and tone. Mm. And everything. Yeah, it just didn't add up. It didn't feel right. And I was just like, we were meant to be setting up. We were meant to be playing in like a couple of minutes. And I was just watching them play when the sun hits and like tearing up and be like, oh my God. Like
mesmerized in the distance.
Yeah, it was absolutely, it was an incredible experience and something I won't forget.
Yeah, wow.
I'm sort of loath to bring up the whole TikTok thing, only because, you know, it sort of seems like a bit cheap to talk about. But then I guess it's progressed you guys a long way, right? From the backing of that meme with Skins, which is just like a weird sort of conjoined connection of your song and a moment in TV history. But in real terms, the exposure you received from that was something that really helped propel the group forward, right? I mean,
definitely. Well, it's not even really the first time that's kind of happened. I mean, like, this has obviously been like the biggest impact from social media, someone uploading our material in that kind of way. Yeah. But I mean, it goes further back with that second EP again. I think 2017, I think in January, some people in the US started uploading it to their YouTube page, and they had quite a following of subscribers and everything. And then, like, all those people started seeing the music, you know, they'll get notifications being like, oh, this person has uploaded a new song. And it's just like blowing up and word of mouth. So we've always weirdly, I don't know how and I don't know why, but there's always kind of been this online word of mouth traction. Mm. And I think now it's just reached a head with TikTok, because now that's the largest social media platform. I don't get it myself.
I heard you had to install it.
Three of us all together in that boat.
Yeah. Yeah. I read you had to install it to have a look at it because you didn't have it before.
Yeah, I can't get into it. It feels like the fast food of social media. I don't know.
It feels like the cheap version of Vine, and I can't get behind it.
Yeah, I actually really liked Vine. Vine was hilarious because you're restricted to 7 seconds, whereas with TikTok, it's just like they're trying to cram too much content to like a short space of time. Like it just feels, I don't know. I just can't get into it. But I'm glad there's another generation that are using it and are sharing music and are discovering bands like us in that way, even if it's through Skins, you know. I'll take that.
Yeah.
100%. Take what you can get. The guitar work on your album is something really special. In particular, like the unique sound you've used on songs like Time Crisis. It's almost like The Cure sometimes. And I read that there was a definite influence for all the guitar nerds out there. Like, how do you go about curating that sound, I suppose?
I'd say The Cure is definitely an influence. It's a huge influence for Jake Johnson, our bass player, as well, because he grew up really listening to The Cure. I think I might have been more of a Smith guy. I don't want to get into that debate. I've always been into really melodic, jangly guitar lines, and always things that sound slightly out of tune or sounds kind of broken and weird and warbled. It's actually very like pleasing, I think, to the human ear. So
I like it. Yeah, because it sort of makes you sort of stand out, and it does evoke some memories for people out there who do like the Smiths and The Cure and you know, hearing in a new sort of modern context, but with sort of a uplifting indie dreamy pop vibe. Like it's a really cool mix of sounds, and that's, I think, it's what makes you guys really unique.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Newcastle, hey? Like, it seems to be a great burgeoning music scene. Of course, I mean, it's a city that gave us Silverchair and the Screaming Jets, and it's got a good long history of great music. But right now, you've got, like, Rave Tapes and E4E, Fritz, Sleepeaser. We played Sleepeaser in July on our show last week.
Cool.
So it's really exciting just getting a feel for what Newcastle's doing right now. You also produce for Teddy, who did some sax on Panache, so there's a whole connection there. What's in the water up in Newey? Like, how's it all going with the scene there at the moment?
I mean, I wish I could tell you, but I think, I mean, because of COVID, it's kind of put me out of touch. I guess everybody a little bit out of touch with the music scene, because it's like you can't go to gigs and you can't engage with your local community and see what other people are doing and see what those new emerging acts are doing as well. I mean, unless you're really like on the pulse on social media.
Yeah.
I will say that, yeah, there are acts such as Teddy, which I am, you know, co-writing and co-producing with, and I think she's got so much potential. Another band I'm also doing the same with, and I also play bass in, NTL Landmarks, I think are doing great. They're currently working the EP.
Cool.
And then there's also Creator Face, who feature on Panache.
Yeah.
Just prolific. I think they're about to drop another mixtape. And yeah, there's a bunch of other like smaller bands that are coming up, but it really makes me miss going to shows and just hanging out and seeing what people are up to.
I feel like there's going to be a massive glut of shows, obviously, when we can have proper stand-up gigs again. And all these bands that have been working in the sidelines, in the backgrounds, you know, in the studios, are just all of a sudden they're just going to hit the stages. And it's going to be just like an overload.
It's going to be so much
music. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. I feel like we have to have just festivals every weekend of all the bands that have just got all this music lined up, ready to play.
We'll just all quit our full-time jobs and just go to concerts.
That would be great.
So we were doing a little bit of stalking prior to this interview, and we were on your Spotify, and we noticed that you have a playlist, and it's a really interesting mix of genres and of artists. You've got Britney, you've got some Jerry G on there, you've got Jason, you've got Kanye. It's just everything you could ever want to listen to. Does what you're listening to end up reflecting in your music, or is it kind of separate? You know, do your moods then write into your music, or do you listen to totally different genres to what you would ever write?
I do, yeah, I definitely do listen to completely different genres to what I would write, but I think the influences from whatever I'm listening to at the time do bleed in. And I mean, whether that's like textures or sounds or even just like song structure or like little like tiny like hooks or like just little ideas, it all filters back and creates a sound that ends up becoming, you know, Vacations.
Mm. And speaking of that, let's play a track from the album. One we sort of mentioned before, Panache, it's got a team up with Creator Face and Sarah Sykes from Sunscreen and Flower Truck. So it's a real like collaborative effort on this track. Can you tell us a bit about it before we play it?
Yeah, sure. That was actually, Panache was one of the first demos for the album, but it was a more of a guitar orientated, like focus track.
Yeah.
And while we were going through the writing and cutting process, I just wasn't too connected with it. I kind of felt like we had stronger compositions that were going to make it for the album. So it sort of sat on the sidelines for a little bit, but Jake saw a lot of potential in it. And we kind of, as we were getting close, we like, you know, needed like maybe a couple more songs just to like finish off the album. He's like, oh, why don't we like revisit that track? And I was like, no, it's dead. It's gone. We're not bringing that back. But I did, there were like one or two like chord progressions I really liked and, you know, some sounds here and there. And I was like, I'll give it another crack. And I sat down on the track again 2 weeks before entering the studio. I was listening to a lot of Men I Trust at the time.
Oh,
and that
amazing.
Band has a lot of very forward melodic bass lines, kind of like Carole K-esque for me, which I really like. And so I just sort of reapproached the song with the bass guitar in mind and played that first, and then just started stacking and layering and wrote it in one sitting only like 2 or 3 weeks before going into the studio. And I had the first three and a half minutes down, and then I had that like beat switch B section kind of outro of the song.
Yeah.
Only like an initial extra like 30 seconds of that part. And I knew that I wanted other people to collaborate. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted other people on the track. So I had the second verse blank, and I did have Sarah in mind from the get-go. Nice. And then with that outro, because it was just so different, I was like, oh, it'd be funny to hear someone rapping it. Why don't I just get Creator Face in and see what they can do?
Yeah.
And then when we were down at the Grove, we spent, I think, a solid day just finessing and fleshing out that beat switch and just doing all these little touch-ups. And there was actually one point where I actually like reconsidered the collabs as well. I was like, maybe I should try a different thing. And I was like, I was just sort of listening to like other artists on Spotify and kind of like pretend auditioning. And I was like, no, it has to be these people. It has to be this sound.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's not going to work. So
well,
that's kind of how it all came together. And I'm very stoked with that track.
It really worked. And it's one of the highlights from the album for sure. Let's have a listen to it right now.
Welcome back, guys. You just heard Panache by Vacations. We are chatting right now to Campbell. How are you going?
Hello. I'm well. I'm well. Yourself?
I am great. Thanks for being with us today. Obviously, this is the first interview we're doing on the Tuck Shop, so we are very excited to be able to chat to some of our awesome Aussie musicians at the moment. A little bit earlier, you mentioned that Vacations actually started as like a solo project in your bedroom, and I read that it was you posting songs to Tumblr. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct.
100% correct. Okay. I just wanted to confirm. I was a massive Tumblr user in high school. It was kind of one of the OG platforms in terms of like artistic expression, I suppose, and visibility online. So,
yeah, I kind of miss it. I feel like it was the only social platform where you sort of could be vulnerable.
Exactly.
Online.
100%. I feel like that's why it was so popular. It probably still is popular among teenagers, but maybe we're a little bit too old for it now.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like the right platform to post original music. I wouldn't have done it on Facebook, or I don't even think I had Instagram at the time, but Tumblr felt right. There's something about it.
Yeah, but definitely. So I suppose my question is, nowadays, it's impossible to get away from digital integration into music. You know, it's everywhere, especially we were talking in terms of TikTok. You can create viral hits literally in minutes nowadays. Do you think it hinders the modern music industry in terms of like oversaturation? There's so much out there all the time.
That is a really good question, and I could probably talk about this for hours, but I'll try and think of a way I can condense it. But I do think because of ever-changing mediums and formats within the music industry, it does dictate how artists approach music and how they construct and write their songs. So I think, because like you want that chorus almost immediately now, you need that hook straight away. So when you're like scrolling through, say, something like TikTok, because it is so, it's just content right in front of your face, and you can just easily swipe and see the next video. It's like you have to grab people's attention straight away.
Yeah, it seems so, like, yeah, if you don't have that hook or that quick something to grab people's attention, you lose them. That's not how music works. I mean, music can be a slow burn. It can be, you know, you don't know what the change-up's going to happen. You've got to listen to more than 10 seconds.
Exactly. So I do think it's moving more towards a, like, just very pop chorus. I mean, it always kind of has been. Just very, like, short, succinct singles rather than crafting, say, a long-lasting album kind of impression. I think that's what's changing a lot as well. And I think with that too, going back to overnight sort of successes, it's like, yeah, you can be an overnight success and you can have a fan base, I guess, in quotation marks, but they're only really there for the single.
Yeah.
And then say that artist then starts to put out more material. Well, it's like, that fan base might not care so much. And there's quite a large drop off when that artist, you know, finally does put out their debut album. So
yeah,
I find
definitely.
That.
I suppose we do
really
see a lot of
as well.
Yeah, we do see a lot of artists who will have sort of one-hit wonders nowadays. Like just they will go absolutely gangbusters with one song, and then by the time the album comes around, or even the second single, sometimes people are just completely uninterested.
Yeah, which I guess is nothing new. I mean, there always has been one-hit wonders, but it does feel now that it's easier than ever to become a one-hit wonder, and it's a more extreme because your fan base is just exploded. It's everywhere. You've got like a legion of fans, whereas I guess back then it might have been a bit more restricted, or maybe just to like your specific country or something like that. Like it's easier than ever to have a worldwide reach and make an impression on people.
Yeah, I've seen some you know, you got fans all over the country, of course, and you had to cancel a Northern American tour for this because of COVID, is that right?
Oh, that was 2 years ago. That was due to visa issues.
Oh, that was visa stuff. Oh, sorry, I got the timelines wrong.
No. That's okay. We would have been touring a lot this year for the album. I mean, granted, but yeah, because of COVID, we had to cancel all those plans. So, which is a shame. I do miss touring, but I've been keeping busy, just trying to work on other projects or, you know, do other musical things.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we've got a. In this time of no live gigs or very limited live gigs, unless you're seated and all those sort of conditions, you're taking to an album launch with a worldwide stream in a couple of weeks, on the 31st of October, in fact.
Yes.
that's pretty exciting. Like, and I saw that you've obviously got all the time zones set for the world. You've got to sort of stream it live to everyone at once. What are you sort of expecting with that? Like, where are you going to be, like, setting up? Are you going to do, like, a normal gig, play through the whole album? How's it going to look?
It's going to be a mix of tracks. Well, kind of like a greatest hits.
Yeah. Well, like a good gig. Yeah.
No, I work at a local studio in Kais Hill here, just around the corner from my house, Sawtooth Studios. So
cool.
We're going to be setting up there. It's essentially our just rehearsal space. It's where we go every Monday. It's where we practice. Yeah. It's where we do some recording. It's where I do a bunch of other like recording and production stuff myself there as well. So we're going to be set up there. It's going to be 6 tracks from the new album and then 6 other tracks from like Changes and Vibes.
Nice.
And yeah, it feels like the most accessible way for fans to see us. I don't want to do like, I don't know, at the moment I'm not really interested in doing like a seated down show maybe in Sydney. It's like, well, I want to play new songs to people around the world, so how can we bridge that gap? And I feel like this is maybe the closest we can get until COVID sort of subsides.
I'm the same. Like, I've been really struggling with, I love live music. Like, I used to go to at least a couple of gigs a week, if not more. Mm. And with these seated gig ideas, I'm like really struggling because for me, I want to get up close and personal to the band. I want to stand up. I want to feel it, you know, and I feel sitting down, it's quite hard, unless it's a really chilled gig, of course. But if you want to dance, you want to move, you want to, you know, show your appreciation, I feel like you've really got to be up there and standing up to the close to the stage. So I've been struggling as a fan as well, like in this time. So I can understand where you're coming from as well, playing music to a seated crowd would just be a bit strange.
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me of being 16 in high school and playing Lizotte. It's like seated down cafe.
Oh,
like,
right, yeah.
Like adult contemporary kind of music, and you do like some really cheesy cover. And it's just, I don't know. It just doesn't, it doesn't sit right with me at the moment.
It's a weird vibe. It's a very weird vibe.
Yeah, well, this is great because everyone can tune in wherever you are on the 31st of October. Check out the times. I think it's 8 o'clock. Well, I should have had it in front of me, and I don't. tell us the times.
I don't know either.
Okay, where can people go to find the times?
They can check our social media at vacationsband_.
Does that mean there's another vacations band that took the one without the underscore? Cheeky.
Maybe. There's a couple of other vacations out there, but somehow we snagged it. We've claimed the name.
So. Well, you're the only one we care about.
Yeah.
That's very sweet.
Well, really excited to chat to you today, and I appreciate taking your time on a Sunday as well to talk to us.
People can check
out the album Forever in Bloom. It's fantastic, and we're spinning it here on 2SER as well, not just on the Tuck Shop, but all through the week as well. So really stoked to be able to support some really great Australian music. Campbell from Vacations, thanks so much for your time today.
No worries. Thank you so much.
We're going to take it out now with another track from the album. I think we'll play Time Crisis because I love that guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.